Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 20 Questions. It's that time again to put your knowledge to the test as we embark on another thrilling journey through the world of trivia. In this episode, we're gearing up with another round of brain-teasing questions that will challenge your intellect and keep you on the edge of your seat, from history to pop culture, science to literature. Get ready to flex those mental muscles and show off your expertise. Before we dive in, though, a quick reminder of the rules. 20 questions, one mission. You have a total of 20 questions to answer, each one more intriguing than the last. The goal, to answer all of them correctly. One wrong move, game over. 10 seconds to respond with each question. I will say the question twice, and then you'll have 10 seconds to give me the answer. One wrong answer, and it's game over. The challenge is to see how far you can get without stumbling. So, are you up for it? We'd love to hear from you wherever you may be in the world. If you've got feedback, questions, or suggestions, reach out to us on X at 20 Questions Quiz or drop us an email, 20questionsquiz@gmail.com. Your input keeps the adventure going. So, here we go. Without further ado, let's dive into another exciting round of 20 Questions. Let's see how far you can go this time around. Let's play 20 Questions. So once again, let's give you a mental workout. So settle back, settle in. Let me begin with question number one. What day of the week is named after the god Saturn? What day of the week is named after the god Saturn?
Five, four, three, two, one.
We always start very easy on 20 questions, and of course the answer is Saturday. In many languages, including English, Saturday is derived from Saturn's day, honoring the Roman god Saturn. Question number two. During the Jurassic period, what sort of creatures ruled the earth? During the Jurassic period, what sort of creatures ruled the earth?
Five, four, three, two, one.
During the Jurassic period, which lasted approximately 201 to 145 million years ago, Earth was dominated by a diverse array of dinosaurs. Dinosaurs being the right answer. Question number three. Houston is a city in which American state? Houston is a city in which American state?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Houston is a city located in the state of Texas, US. It is the largest city in Texas and is the fourth biggest in the US by population. Question number four. Oakley are famous manufacturers of what product? Oakley are famous manufacturers of what product?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Oakley are famous manufacturers of sunglasses, eyewear and sports equipment, but mainly sunglasses. The company is well known for its innovative designs, high quality materials, and advanced lens technologies, catering to athletes, outdoor enthusiasts, and individuals seeking performance-driven eyewear. Oakley sunglasses are particularly popular among athletes in various sports, including skiing, cycling, snowboarding, golf, and many, many more. Question number five. Where would a troglodyte live? Where would a troglodyte live?
Five, four, three, two, one.
A troglodyte typically refers to a person who lives in a cave or underground dwelling. The term can be used to describe prehistoric humans who lived in caves. So a troglodyte would live in caves or other subterranean habitats. Question number 6, up in the ante now with literature. Based on the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, what transforms Dr. Jekyll into Mr. Hyde? Based on the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, what transforms Dr. Jekyll into Mr. Hyde?
Five, four, three, two, one.
In the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll is transformed into Mr. Hyde through a consumption of a potion that he himself concocts. This potion brings about a physical and psychological transformation, turning Dr. Jekyll into the sinister and morally corrupt Mr. Hyde. The story explores themes of duality, morality, and the darker aspects of human nature. Question number 7. Who wrote about Eeyore and Christopher Robin? Who wrote about Eeyore and Christopher Robin?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Eeyore and Christopher Robin are characters from A.A. Milne's beloved children's book series Winnie the Pooh and The House at Pooh Corner. A.A. Milne wrote about the adventures of these characters, including Eeyore the Donkey and Christopher Robin, who was based on Milne's own son, Christopher Robin Milne. Moving on to question 8, entertainment. What does the G stand for in the film studio MGM? What does the G stand for in the film studio MGM?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Metro Goldwyn Mayer. Goldwyn, the right answer. MGM is one of the most renowned and historically significant film studios in Hollywood. Its origins date back to the early 20th century, with the consolidation of several smaller studios to form MGM in 1924. The Metro in MGM's name referred to Metro Pictures Corporation, which was founded in 1915. Goldwyn referred to Samuel Goldwyn, a prominent film producer who merged his studio, Goldwyn Pictures, with Metro in 1924. Mayer represents Louis B. Mayer, who was a successful film producer and studio executive, and who became one of the key figures in MGM's early years. Throughout its existence, MGM has been responsible for producing and distributing a vast array of iconic films that have left an indelible mark on cinematic history. From classic musicals like Singing in the Rain and Wizard of Oz, to epic dramas like Gone with the Wind and Ben-Hur, MGM's filmography spans multiple genres and eras. Question number 9. Which South American country has the longest coastline? Which South American country has the longest coastline?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The country with the longest coastline in South America is Brazil. Brazil's coastline stretches for approximately 7,491 kilometers along the Atlantic Ocean, making it the South American country with the longest coastline. Question number 10. Who would most likely use a primal scream in their field of work? Who would most likely use a primal scream in their field of work?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
A primal scream is a therapeutic technique often associated with certain forms of psychotherapy, particularly those focused on releasing repressed emotions and trauma. Therefore, a professional who might most likely use a primal scream in their field of work would be a psychotherapist or counsellor, specializing in modalities such as primal therapy or expressive therapy. Now, primal therapy was developed by psychologist Arthur Janoff. Involves accessing and expressing deeply repressed emotions, often through techniques like screaming, crying, and other forms of emotional release. The primal scream is a central aspect of this therapy, serving as a cathartic means of accessing and releasing pent-up emotions from early childhood experiences or past traumas. Expressive therapists who use creative art such as music, art, drama, and the movements in therapy might also incorporate primal scream techniques into their work to facilitate emotional expression and healing. Overall, professionals in the mental health field who specialize in trauma therapy, expressive arts therapy, or primal therapy are most likely to utilize primal scream techniques as part of their therapeutic approach. So we're 10 down, 10 to go. Halfway through this edition of 20 questions, now we get more difficult with questions to come on geography, music, the animal kingdom, US presidents, discoveries, literature, Oscars, music, and finally we'll finish with space. But first, question 11 of 20 is this, and it's geography. North Korea and South Korea are divided by what line of latitude? North Korea and South Korea are divided by what line of latitude?
Five, four, three, two, one.
North Korea and South Korea are divided by the 38th parallel, which is a circle of latitude that is 38 degrees north of the Earth's equatorial plane. This line of latitude played a significant role in the division of the Korean Peninsula following World War II and has since become a geopolitical symbol of the separation between the two Koreas. Question 12. Music. John Bonham was the drummer for which band? John Bonham was the drummer for which band?
Five. Four, three, two, one.
John Bonham is the drummer of the legendary rock band Led Zeppelin. Formed in 1968, they became one of the most influential and successful rock bands in history, known for their innovative music blending blues, rock, and folk elements. Bonham's powerful and distinctive drumming style contributed significantly to the band's sound and earned him recognition as one of the greatest drummers in rock music. Led Zeppelin's iconic songs include Stairway to Heaven, Whole Lotta Love, Kashmir, and many others, cementing their place in the pantheon of rock. Question 13. A tercel is the male of what animal? A tercel, spelt T-E-R-C-E-L, is the male of what animal?
Five, four, three, two, one.
A tercel is the male of a falcon, specifically a bird of prey such as a peregrine falcon or gyrfalcon. In falconry, the term tercel is often used to refer to a male falcon that has been trained for hunting. Moving on to question 14. I am ready to meet my maker. Whether my maker is prepared for the great ordeal of meeting me is another matter. This is the epitaph for which historical figure? I am ready to meet my maker. Whether my maker is prepared for the great ordeal of meeting me is another matter. This is the epitaph for which historical figure?
Five, four, three, two, one.
This epitaph belongs to Sir Winston Churchill, the renowned British statesman, orator, and Prime Minister who led the United Kingdom during World War II. Throughout his life, Churchill was known for his wit humour and sharp intellect. The epitaph, I am ready to meet my maker. Whether my maker is prepared for the great ordeal of meeting me is another matter. Captures his irreverent yet profound approach to life and death. It reflects Churchill's humility, his acknowledgement of morality, and his indomitable spirit in the face of uncertainty. Churchill passed away on January 24th, 1965, leaving behind a legacy as one of the great statesmen of the 20th century, whose leadership and eloquence continued to inspire generations around the world. Question 15 of 20 is on US presidents, and it's this. What is the most popular first name for US presidents? What is the most popular first name for US presidents?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Now, how many of you went for George on this one? You'd be wrong. The correct answer is actually James. There are six US presidents named James. They are James Madison. He was the fourth president of the US, often referred to as the father of the Constitution. James Monroe served as the fifth president of the USA, perhaps known for the Monroe Doctrine. James Polk was the 11th president of the USA. During his presidency, Polk oversaw significant territorial expansion of the US. James Buchanan was the 15th president of the USA, immediately preceding the American Civil War. James Garfield, the 20th president of the USA, served for a brief period before he was assassinated in 1881. And finally, James Carter, otherwise known as Jimmy Carter, served as the 39th president of the USA, known for his efforts in promoting peace, human rights, and environmental conservation. Final five time. Five more questions on this edition of 20 questions. If you've got the previous 15 correct, all credit to you. But I've got five tough questions to come. They are on discoveries, literature, the Oscars, music and copyright, and finally space. Question 16 of 20 is this. In 1911, what did explorer Hiram Bingham discover? In 1911, what did explorer Hiram Bingham discover?
Five, four, three, two, one.
In 1911, the American explorer Hiram Bingham stumbled upon the hidden marvel of Machu Picchu during his explorations in the Andes Mountains of Peru. At the time, Bingham was in search of Vilcabamba, the last refuge of the Inca civilization, which was believed to be located in the region. Instead, he encountered the ancient city of Machu Picchu, nestled amongst the rugged peaks of the Andes. Machu Picchu translates to Old Peak in the Quechua language, and it was built by the Inca Empire in the 15th century during the reign of the Emperor Pachacuti. This breathtaking city served as a religious, ceremonial, and administrative center for the Inca rulers and their elite. Its strategic location on a mountain ridge provided both natural defenses and stunning panoramic views of the surrounding valleys and peaks. Bingham's discovery of Machu Picchu captured the imagination of the world. His expeditions and subsequent publications brought international attention to the site, sparking widespread interest in Inca culture and archaeology. Archaeological excavations at Machu Picchu revealed its intricate stone structures, terraced agricultural fields, and sophisticated water management systems, showcasing the advanced engineering and architectural skills of the Inca people. The significance of Machu Picchu extends beyond its architectural marvels. It offers invaluable insights into the daily life, religious practices, and societal organization of the Inca civilization. Despite its abandonment and subsequent overgrowth by the surrounding jungle, Machu Picchu remained remarkably well preserved, providing archaeologists with a treasure trove of artifacts and evidence to study. Today, Machu Picchu stands as a UNESCO World Heritage Site and is one of the most iconic symbols of ancient civilizations. It attracts millions of visitors each year, drawn not only by its historical and cultural significance, but also by its awe-inspiring beauty and mystical ambiance. Machu Picchu continues to inspire wonder and admiration, inviting travelers from around the world to embark on a journey of discovery amidst the clouds of the Andes. Four to go. Question 17 of 20. Literature. What 19th century novel was originally published under the pseudonym Currer Bell? What 19th century novel was originally published under the pseudonym Currer Bell?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Charlotte Bronte, one of the most celebrated authors of the 19th century, initially published her groundbreaking novel, Jane Eyre, under the pseudonym Currer Bell. This decision was born out of the societal norms and gender biases prevalent during the Victorian era, which often made it difficult for female authors to gain recognition and respect for their work. Jane Eyre was published in 1847 and tells the story of its title character, an orphaned young woman who faces numerous challenges and injustices as she navigates her way through life. The novel is renowned for its exploration of themes of love, independence, morality, and the struggle for identity in the face of social constraints. Under the guise of Currer Bell, Charlotte Bronte was able to present her work to the public without the immediate scrutiny and prejudice that might have accompanied the revelation of her gender. Despite the initial anonymity, Jane Eyre was met with critical acclaim and captured the imaginations of readers across Victorian England and beyond. The novel's success not only established Bronte as a significant literary voice of her time, but also contributed to the ongoing dialogue surrounding women's rights and the societal expectations of the 19th century. In subsequent editions and reprints, Charlotte Bronte's true identity was revealed, solidifying her place in literary history as a pioneering figure whose work continues to be studied, admired, and cherished by readers worldwide. Three to go. Question 18 of 20 is on the Oscars. And it's this. Who is the only person to receive two Oscars for the same role in the same film? Who is the only person to receive two Oscars for the same role in the same film?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Now, this is a very difficult question, deserving of a place in our final five. This is one I didn't even have a clue on and would be quite difficult to get in just 10 seconds. So maybe a few of you have gone out on this one, unless you know the name of Harold Russell. Harold Russell's remarkable achievement in winning two Oscars for the same role in the same film is a testament to both his exceptional performance and the profound impact of his portrayal of Homer Parrish in the film The Best Years of Our Lives in 1946. Born on January the 14th, 1940 in North Sydney, Nova Scotia, Harold Russell enlisted in the US Army after the attack on Pearl Harbor, despite being a Canadian citizen. During World War II, he served as an army instructor, but tragedy struck when a demolition accident caused him to lose both of his hands. Russell's experiences as a disabled veteran would profoundly shape both his life and the role in the film The Best Years of Our Lives. Director William Wyler discovered Russell through his involvement with the Mark 7 Productions documentary Diary of a Sergeant, where Russell was featured as himself, demonstrating how to use the innovative hooks attached to his prosthetic hands. Impressed by Russell's authenticity and presence on screen, Wyler offered him the role of Homer Parrish, a returning veteran coping with the challenges of readjusting to civilian life with prosthetic hands. Russell's performance in The Best Years of Our Lives was deeply moving and authentic, reflecting his own experiences as a disabled veteran. His portrayal captured the physical and emotional struggles of Homer Parrish with remarkable depth and sensitivity, earning him widespread acclaim. At the 19th Academy Awards in 1947, Harold Russell made history by winning both the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor and an Honorary Academy Award. The Honorary Award recognized Russell's bringing hope and courage to his fellow veterans through his appearance in the film, acknowledging not only his acting talent, but also his inspirational impact as a disabled veteran portraying a disabled character on screen. Russell's dual Oscar win remains a unique achievement in Oscar history, underscoring the extraordinary significance of his performance and the profound resonance of The Best Years of Our Lives in post-war America. Beyond his cinematic success, Harold Russell continued to advocate for veterans' rights and disability awareness throughout his life, leaving behind a lasting legacy of courage, resilience, and artistic excellence. The story of Harold Russell, who won two Oscars for the same role in the same film in 1947. Two to go on this edition of 20 Questions. Question 19 of 20, music in the courts. In 1976, a US court ruled that George Harrison's My Sweet Lord infringed the copyright of which song?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The legal battle between George Harrison and Bright Tunes Music Corporation, the publisher of the song He's So Fine by the Chiffons, is one of the most notable instances of music copyright infringement in the 20th century. The controversy arose from the similarities between Harrison's My Sweet Lord, released in 1970 as part of his album All Things Must Pass, and the Chiffons' hit song He's So Fine, released in 1963. Both songs featured a distinctive repeating melody in the chorus. Bright Tunes Music Corporation filed a lawsuit against Harrison and his record label, alleging that My Sweet Lord copied the melody from He's So Fine without authorization. The case went to trial, and in 1976, a US court ruled in favor of Bright Tunes, determining that Harrison had indeed subconsciously copied the melody of He's So Fine when creating My Sweet Lord. While Harrison maintained that any similarities were unintentional and a result of his admiration for the song, the court found otherwise. As a result of the ruling, Harrison was required to pay damages for copyright infringement. The case had significant implications for the music industry, highlighting the importance of respecting intellectual property rights and the potential consequences of unintentional plagiarism in music composition. Additionally, it underscored the complexities of creativity and the subconscious influences that can shape artistic expression. So we've made it to the final question on this edition of 20 Questions. The hardest question of our 20. If you've got the previous 19 right, this is the one you need to get right to say that you have defeated all 20 questions. Again, a feat in nearly 52 episodes now. I'm yet to hear anyone say that they've done. Question 20 of 20. It's this. And it's on space. Which city gained fame for turning on its lights as US astronaut John Glenn passed overhead during his orbit of Earth in 1962? Which city gained fame for turning on its lights as US astronaut John Glenn passed overhead during his orbit of Earth in 1962.
Five, four, three, two, one.
So, do you think you've got it? Do you think you have the right answer on this edition of 20 Questions? Which city gained fame for turning on its lights as US astronaut John Glenn passed overhead during his orbit of Earth in 1962? On the February the 20th, 1962, John Glenn embarked on a groundbreaking mission aboard the Friendship 7 spacecraft, becoming the first American to orbit the Earth. As Glenn's spacecraft traversed the skies, the city of Perth, Australia, played a remarkable role in demonstrating global solidarity and enthusiasm for this historic moment. As Friendship 7 soared overhead during Glenn's orbit, the citizens of Perth collectively decided to illuminate their city. This decision was not orchestrated by any official directive, but emerged spontaneously as a gesture of support and admiration for Glenn's extraordinary journey. As the spacecraft streaked across the sky, Perth's lights twinkled below, symbolizing the city's solidarity with the astronaut and the US's space exploration endeavors. The significance of Perth's gesture extended beyond a mere display of lights. It encapsulated the spirit of international cooperation and goodwill during the early years of space exploration. Glenn's mission captured the imagination of people worldwide, transcending national boundaries and fostering a sense of unity among nations. The image of Earth illuminating the night sky as Glenn orbited overhead became an enduring symbol of humanity's collective awe and the excitement for the exploration of space. It remains a poignant reminder of the profound impact of space exploration in uniting people across continents and cultures in shared wonder and aspiration. So, have you hit the stars on 20 questions? How far did you get this week? Let me know on X at 20 Questions Quiz. Love to hear from you wherever you may be in the world. Or if you want to get in touch with me, drop me an email. 20questionsquiz@gmail.com. Just to remind you, of course, that new episodes drop every Thursday morning at 6 a.m. I do hope that you can subscribe and maybe test your friends, your family, your workmates. See how far they can get on 20 Questions. From me, Johnny Bryan, thank you so much again for your company. Till next time. See you soon. Bye for now.